Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We're excited to welcome Curtis Crabtree, who covers the Seahawks for Sports Radio KJR in Seattle. And why don't we start with the offense, Curtis? It did look like a lot of the issue is with the offensive line. And I know that there's Khalil Mack on the other side applying pressure, but what did you see with that O-line on Monday Night Football?
Well, it's certainly no secret that Seattle's offensive line has had its issues through the years. I think Russell Wilson tends to exacerbate the offensive line problems from time to time because he just flat doesn't get the ball out, doesn't throw it, doesn't get it out to his receivers, and it's tough to tell on a TV copy whether receivers are covered or whatnot. But he creates some of his own pressure by holding the ball too long and not getting rid of it on time like he needs to. And when they only ran the ball. With their running backs 19 times on the night, it was a much smaller number than that until late into the fourth quarter. They're not doing a ton to help Russell Wilson out either, because it allows the opposing teams to just come after them, come after Russell, and not have the balance in the offense that they've stressed all offseason that they want to get back. So it's no one thing. The offensive line certainly has its areas to clean up as well, but when you face Von Miller and Khalil Mack the first 2 weeks, they're going to apply some pressure. They need to do what they can to not add more to their own problems as it is.
Is there room to run the ball?
Well, they got to try. More so than anything. I mean, Chris Carson basically didn't get a snap the entire second half, which is odd, to say the least. He had three carries on their first three plays of the game, had another three in the first half, and then did not touch the ball again on offense the rest of the game, which is confusing. There was one point from, I think, the 8-11 minute mark of the second quarter and until well into the third quarter where I think they called 14 straight pass plays, which for a team that says they want to run the football is curious, to say the least. And then, you know, they had 80 yards of offense through three quarters with 1 yard gained in the third quarter in total. Their offense just looked at times completely broken tonight, which is concerning on a lot of levels, given the fact that defensively they were missing Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright and Trey Flowers, a rookie corner who started last week, wasn't able to play either. And yet that unit held Chicago to 17 points and did its job. It was the offense that was basically only missing Doug Baldwin of consequence that couldn't seem to function. So there's a lot of reason to be concerned about that for sure.
Seemed like they were trying a bunch of short passes, which actually looked a lot like the Giants on Sunday Night Football, where you have Saquon Barkley, who catches 14 receptions as opposed to having as many handoffs and as many carries. Why in the world have they not been able to fix it?
That's a good question. I mean, you look at the collection of guys that they have on the offensive line now, they're not, you know, a bad group of guys. You've got Dwayne Brown, a former All-Pro and first-rounder. You've got Justin Britt, who's made a Pro Bowl as an alternate replacement and a second-round pick at center. You've got Ethan Postick, a second-round pick at left guard. Presumably, when they're healthy, they'll have DJ Fluker, another first-round pick at right guard, and Jermaine Ifedi, another first-round pick at right tackle. So that's three first-round picks and two second-round picks from their careers along that offensive line. Granted, J.R. Sweezy's been playing there the first 2 weeks with Fluker injured, but he's also a seven-year NFL pro that's been with Seattle before. So, you know, the offensive line has had its issues for sure, and that's why I kind of point some here at Russell Wilson, because there was times in the game where they were, you know, same thing last week in Denver, where they're calling quick passes to try to get the ball moving, and Russell just doesn't throw the ball, and he sits there and he holds it. Now an offensive line that was blocking for a play that they expected to be a three-step drop and throw, and Russell still got the ball 3 seconds into the play and is trying to figure out something to do, now all of a sudden it's kind of getting tough on them. So there's a lot that goes into the equation for sure.
Curtis Crabtree covers the Seahawks for Sports Radio KJR in Seattle with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. A lot of attention has been paid to the defensive side of the ball, where there have been a bunch of changes. Really fun to see the Griffin brothers playing together, and Shaquille obviously had a really great game performance on Monday Night Football. How close is this defense to having the same attitude and edge and intensity as what was formerly known as the Legion of Boom and the defense that they kind of had that helped them get to two Super Bowls?
Well, Pete Carroll is a defensive coach first and foremost, so if there was any area of the ball you would expect him to be able to figure out at some point or another, it's the defensive side. And they have created some turnovers throughout the first two games. They were much better just in general tonight than they were even a week ago in Denver. But even though Denver moved up and down the field on them pretty at will a week ago, they did have the three interceptions, two from Bradley McDougald, one from Earl Thomas, to kind of help them out quite a bit and keep them in that game. And then obviously tonight, Shaquille Griffin had two picks as well. Same sort of situation there. If you told them going into the game tonight that they would allow only 17 points defensively, given the guys that they were missing on that side of the ball, I think they would absolutely have taken that. And the one thing that they're kind of missing more so than anything right now is pass rush. They don't have a ton of it. They got to find it from somewhere. Frank Clark's got a sack in each of the first two games, but beyond that, it's been pretty lacking. And I think that's something that will continue to show up throughout the season. The back seven, I think they'll figure out. Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright should be back next week.
Mm-hmm.
The one corner spot's really the only thing at true issue at this point. So defensively, they should mostly be okay outside of the pass rush, which might be a struggle. But, you know, all things considered, the offensive side of the ball is the bigger concern at this point in time.
Has it been a smooth re-entry for Earl Thomas?
As smooth as I think it can be. I mean, he's going to play football because he loves to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But there was certainly the issues there coming from last year and the fact he didn't get a contract and he still wants to get paid, and all of that is still a very real situation. But at least for what it seems like in the meantime, he's been willing to move forward without it becoming too big of a distraction or anything like that. And so we'll have to see how it plays out from here. I know Seattle's left the door open for wanting to keep him beyond the season, but, you know, he's basically intimated that he would like to stay here too, as long as they pay him what he feels he's worth. And there could be a disagreement on what that number and that value is. And so a long way to go still on the Earl Thomas front to figure out exactly where it's going to end up. But through two games, it seems like he's jumped right back into it.
Were they tempted to trade him in the offseason?
I think they were willing to listen because of the circumstances and the fact that he basically announced at the Pro Bowl in January, I'm not playing on it without a new contract. So it's not like it caught him by surprise that was going to be the case. But at the end of the day, you know, if he leaves at the end of the season, they could get a third-round compensatory pick in return for him. You know, depending on the formula and how it all shakes out, that would be the maximum they could get there. So if they're going into it with that assumption, then there's pretty much no reason to trade him for anything less than a third round pick at this point. And Earl Thomas is a guy that, you know, that you look around at what they traded to New York for Sheldon Richardson last year. They sent a second round pick and Jermaine Kearse to get Sheldon Richardson. When they traded for Dwayne Brown last year, they sent a third round pick this year and a second round pick next year to get him. And if they weren't getting that sort of, you know, pick compensation back in return for Earl, a guy who is absolutely on par, if not above, at his position, those sorts of players that they were involved in trades for a year ago, then I don't know if they necessarily felt like they were getting the value to make the move either. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Curtis Crabtree covers the Seahawks after Monday Night Football. He's got a lot to talk about on Sports Radio KJR and with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. The statistics are well known. I've used them on my show over and over the last few days about teams that fall into an 0-2 hole, and they're only 12% likely to make the postseason. However, you're around this team all the time. They have a lot of experience, even with some of the turnover they've had, not just their coaching staff, but guys who are on the field. What tells you that they can turn this around and still make the postseason?
Well, they did it. They were one of those teams that did it here just a couple years ago. When Cam Chancellor was holding out to start the 2015 season, they started on the road at St. Louis and at Green Bay with losses in both of those games, and then proceeded to make the playoffs that year. That was the year with the Blair Walsh-missed field goal and the freezing cold in Minnesota, and then they lost in Carolina later on that season.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not that team, though. And so we don't necessarily know what this group is at this point in time. They don't have the talent and mainly the depth that they had at that point. So what this team is, it's tough to say. When Russell Wilson is playing at a peak level, and you saw it on a couple of the throws he made tonight, the touchdown pass to Tyler Lockett was peak Russell Wilson. That's a fantastic throw. The crossing route where he was moving forward earlier on that drive to get Lockett a decent game, the ball where it was a fumble almost out of bounds, that was a great play for him. But those plays are kind of too few and far between right now, and the negative plays of him taking sacks that he shouldn't take, and obviously the pick six tonight was a poor one for him, and the strip sacks on the fumbles in the backfield, that's stuff that you haven't seen from Russell in the past. And because the margin of error is lessened given the fact that they don't have some of the talent they used to have, Russell's got to play at that top-end premier sort of level every week for this team to really truly succeed. And going back to late stages of last year when they were banged up a little bit defensively and so forth, that onus has been on him. And at least throughout most of these games, he's made some fourth-quarter comebacks and that sort of thing, but throughout the primary part of the games, he's kind of falling short over the last little bit. So he's got to play better. If he can do that, then there's certainly the capability there, but he's got to raise his bar up a little bit more.
Sounds like you put the sacks and a lot of the other offensive limitations at Russell's feet and not at the feet of the O-line.
Well, it goes hand in hand. I think there's a proclivity out there to blame every sack on the offensive line. And with Seattle's situation, that's just not the case. I mean, on the strip sack that Khalil Mack had tonight of Russell Wilson, that came 4 seconds into the play. I mean, there's plenty of time to get rid of the football or throw it away or whatever the case may be if there's not anything there. But because he plays out of structure as much as he does, it puts pressure on the offensive line more so than some pocket quarterbacks can be. So it's just it's a give and take sort of situation, and Russell, I don't think, does them any favors either at times. So it's not all on Russell. It's not all on the offensive line. Collectively, they've all got to do a better job than they have the first 2 weeks. But you know, he deserves some of the blame in this pie as well.
You can find Curtis on Twitter at Curtis_Crabtree, and he covers the Seahawks, the Mariners, and the Huskies for Sports Radio KJR. So it's a busy time for him. Curtis, thank you so much for a couple of minutes. I appreciate it.
No problem at all.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.